Well, this is a crazy time, isn't it? Where do I even begin? You know where I'm going to begin? I'm going to begin with beer because I'm actually doing this. Where are we now? 10 to 6 on a Friday afternoon, which is much later than what I'd normally like to do these things. But I've had a very busy day arranging a heap of things, some of which I'm going to talk about in a moment, which I am actually super excited about. Quite excited about this as well. This is, for the international viewers or folks in Australia, this is Bent Spoke. And there's a Canberra brewery, and they make a really, really nice beer. I've got to say, I think it's one of my favorite beers at the moment. This is a really nice IPA that's just apparently big and hoppy based on the can, which it is, but just right for me. So, haven't done a beer weekly update for a while, but crazy times call for crazy measures. Speaking of crazy measures, look, I know stuff is just kind of bizarre all over the place at the moment. I've been at the shops today. You can't get any toilet paper, which is particularly bizarre because you can get like the kitchen paper. And I was mentioning this to someone the other day. It's like, why is there no toilet paper and people losing their minds? So the place is full of kitchen paper. And they're like, oh yeah, but it'd be terrible if you had to wipe your backside on kitchen paper. And I'm sort of going like, people are worried about zombie apocalypse and you're concerned about wiping your backside on kitchen paper. Just in the scheme of things, this doesn't seem to be the biggest problem. I have filled the fridge full of beer, so I'm happy. I got a big delivery the other day. I might even tweet a photo of that later because the fridge does look very, very healthy at the moment. And it's not that I just want to go through this whole thing drinking beer, but I will go through a lot of this drinking beer and basically just trying to get on with life as usual. Which brings me to some of the really, really cool stuff that's coming up. And just as a bit of a theme, I have found in recent times, and there has been some trials and tribulations, if I'm honest, in recent times, some of which I'm going to talk about in a moment with the Project Svalbard, Have I Been Fine? But one of the things that honestly helps get me through crazy times that are stressful and emotional, the rest of it, is just like getting on with my normal everyday stuff, which for me is writing blog posts. We're going to talk about some of those. Doing a bunch of events. We're going to talk about some of those. They're going to be a little bit different to the way events have been. But it's just getting on with business and throwing myself into something that I quite enjoy. On that note, when we have a crisis, there is always opportunity as well. If you're a fan of The Simpsons, you'll recognize the crisis-tunity term. And within this situation at the moment, I guess that the direct impact crisis that impacts me is pretty much every event that I would have normally gone to has been cancelled. Now, normally this would be exceptionally disruptive, shall we say, were it not for the fact that I had basically decided already, well before coronavirus and all this sort of stuff, that I was going to have a few months sitting here in Australia, maybe doing a few little domestic things, but basically not going anywhere overseas. I was going to go to the MVP Summit, which would have had me on an airplane to Seattle probably tomorrow. I decided to pull out of that about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Totally unrelated to coronavirus, which was starting a little bit of traction then, just simply because I didn't want to do the travel. And as I said in the Project Svalbard blog post, which was the 3rd of March, only 10 days ago now, I literally said back then, look, I'm just going to try and have a few months where I catch up on things. So in a way, it doesn't kind of impact me based on what I was going to do anyway. In another way, every single event that I would have normally gone to, or every event that is the sort of thing that I'd go to, is cancelled. It's either cancelled or it's postponed or it's fundamentally changed. And this is where I think there's the opportunity now, and where I'm going to do a bunch of stuff to try and give people things that they can get involved in so that we don't all lose our minds, holed up at home. And also to try and help organizations like NDC, which is the big conference I've been involved in so much since 2014 now, try and help them move through this as well. So I've got three different announcements about events I'm going to be involved in virtually, which means that they're events that you can get involved in from anywhere, and I reckon they're going to be super awesome, and I'm going to explain why in a moment. So the first thing is, we were going to try and do an NDC meetup in Melbourne. I think we're going to try and do it next week. That is definitely not going to happen now because all the in-person stuff is not happening. What we're going to do instead is Scott Helm and I are going to run a Hack Yourself First workshop online in about 13 days from now. When does that make it? The 26th. The 26th. So Thursday 26 of this month and Friday 27, we are going to run it at a time zone that is friendly for Australia, because we really wanted to do that meetup in Australia and it just unfortunately didn't happen. So Scott and I are going to run this together. And the way we're going to do this is we're going to run it online, which he and I have both done many times before, which is the first good news. This is not like, oh, let's just try and test all of these things under duress with little time to plan. So we have run online workshops many times before. I've written blog posts about how I was running them online, and if companies would like to do it, let's do it. So that's tried and tested for us, and we've gone through multiple iterations of improving this. Now, we've learned a bunch of things about running them online, and one of the things we learned is that for one person to run the whole thing online and actually do 8-hour days, which is what a workshop would normally be, 9-to-5 sort of thing. Okay, lunch breaks, but, you know, 8 hours. It's way too taxing. It's way too taxing on someone like me just to sit here and, like, look at the screen the whole time and just talk into the void. So that's hard. It's also way too taxing for time zones. So I'm going to talk about other events in a moment as well that I'm going to get involved in. I can't do 8 hours at a time zone that's friendly for Europe or friendly for the US without me being awake extremely early or extremely late. Early I'm not so bad with. Late doesn't work so well for me because I drink beer. I'm just a morning person. So what we're going to do is, when we run this in Australia-friendly time zones, we're going to kick it off where we're still sort of working out the finer details. Either Scott or myself is going to do the first half of the day. So we'll do roughly 3.5 hours. There'll be like an hour break for lunch. And then the other one, we'll do the other half of the day. So I'm actually super excited about this because Scott's been running my Hack Yourself First workshop. He must have done it dozens of times now. We announced that a couple of years ago. So he knows it inside and out. I obviously know it inside and out because I wrote the workshop. So we're going to do half each, and we're going to make sure that you, if you come to this workshop, get the best of both of us, because we'll get Scott doing, say, the content security policy stuff, which he knows probably better than any other person in the world. So you're going to get the best possible person for that. You'll then get me on other bits, which I might do a little bit better than Scott. I don't know. Scott, if you're listening, I'm not sure what those are yet. We'll figure that out. And we're also going to try and find a way where you get a bit of both of us for a while. We want to make sure that you don't lose what is affectionately known as the hallway track in a conference. So the opportunity to have a bit of banter, a little bit of discussion, not just with us, but with other people as well. And indeed, one of the things we've learned in running these workshops virtually in the past is that it's really important to have a back channel where people can actually communicate. So we're going to make sure that's in there as well. I've got a couple of other ideas about things that Scott and I can do together as part of this. It appears that every time we do videos together or talks together, people really, really like them. So we're going to try and do more of that. I think people like having a bit of character and a bit of personality in these things. The risk with any sort of online event, and I know a lot of organizations are going, hey, we're just going to take the thing that was in person and we're going to chuck it online. The risk is always, how do you, let me not be blunt. Let me be blunt. Yeah, that's that one. Honestly, that's all the beer I've drunk so far. The risk is making it boring as batshit. Because if you just take some talk, which very often conference talks themselves are not always super engaging, there's a big spectrum here, and then you put it online and you lose the atmosphere and the environment, there's a big risk it just falls flat and it becomes yet another boring bloody webinar. So Scott and I are super conscious of that. The organizers of NDC are super conscious of that as well. So we're absolutely determined to make this into something super cool. Now, this will be a two-day workshop. It is the sort of thing that you would normally go along to and pay some fairly substantial amount of money, because that's what workshops cost. But the thing is that when we run these things in person, you've got to pay for venues, and they get very expensive, and staff and food and all the rest of it. And mind you, there's a lot of companies right now trying to figure out how on earth they deal with the fact that they've made commitments to venues and all that sort of thing, and now they can't actually turn up there and people won't buy tickets. So with the one that we're going to do in a couple of weeks, we have the luxury of this just being a brand new thing. Because it is online and because we won't have all those overheads, it's going to be significantly cheaper than doing the workshop in person. We're going to announce the numbers probably on Monday, so 3 days from now. But the most I can say at the moment is it will be less than half of what the cheapest ticket ever was in order to go and see myself or Scott run this workshop. So that's super, super cool. That's number one. Now, number two, I would have liked to have gone to Porto for NDC Porto on the 21st to the... Actually, I should do this in order, shouldn't I? I would have liked to have gone to Copenhagen for NDC Copenhagen on the 1st to the 3rd of April. And if I had gone there, I would have done a two-day workshop and then I probably would have done a talk on the third day. Now, I decided I didn't want to go this year because of the aforementioned aversion to going anywhere away from home simply because I just had too much of it. So I wasn't going to do Copenhagen. I am now going to do Copenhagen, Australian Gold Coast edition. So the joy for me is that I get to be a part of that event without leaving home. So Scott and I will be running Hack Yourself First as part of NDC Copenhagen. And I think we might already be up there on the agenda as of a few hours ago as well. And we'll do the same thing. And again, for time zones, you know, just an example, it's 6 p.m. here for me at the moment. And over in Copenhagen, it is 9 a.m. So it'll be like this time right now for me. I'll do 3.5 hours, which will take me from 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. I'll probably still be drinking beer, which is fine. And then Scott will kick in and then he'll do the night stint while I'm asleep. And then the next day I'll come back and we'll do the same thing again. So it'll still be a normal two-day event in terms of the timing. So I will be, I'm air quoting for people listening, I will be at NDC Copenhagen this year, which is great. I will then be, air quotes again, at NDC Porto on the 21st to the 24th of April, doing the same thing again. So I will be there. Scott will be there. Again, we will be doing the workshop, which we have done so many times virtually, and we know how to make successful virtually. And we will be doing it under the NDC banner. People in those two particular events have already bought tickets for to actually go and attend as well. Now, of course, they're just simply not holding these things in person anymore, but at least we can still run an event for these people. They're going to get a whole bunch of the speakers that would have been there already, plus they're going to get Scott and I, who aren't going to be there. So, yay, bonus, right? Hopefully people look at it as a bonus. Oh. I also hope that people can see that if for companies like NDC and indeed other companies running conferences and for people like Scott, myself and other speakers, we're all just trying to make this stuff work. We're trying to make stuff continue and have some semblance of normality as we go through this phase, so that when we get out the other side of this phase, and there'll be another side, I don't know when it is, but there'll be another side, we want the whole thing to be able to continue. We want companies like NDC to remain profitable and remain viable so that we can all get together at the next NDC, wherever in the world it is, once things do get back to normal. Now, the other thing is, for attendees for any of these events, the ones that Scott and I do on the Australia time zone friendly thing in just under 2 weeks from now, or in Copenhagen or in Porto, the great thing about this for individuals is, of course, you're not traveling anywhere. So for many of these events, people would travel interstate. Gone. So no more cost to travel interstate. No more accommodation costs when you're away. No more having to spend an extra whack of your day traveling to and from the event. More time with your family. Great. So I'm looking at that as a really positive upside. I am really, really hopeful that we just get some great numbers turn up to these events, much more so than what we would have before. Because the other thing, of course, is that we've now got this vacuum. So there's all of these people who would have normally gone to events and done things, can't do them. Great, let's move it online and we'll do it just as well or better than what we would have in person anyway. So that's going to be great. There's organizations, of course, that have training budgets that they can't spend on public conferences now. Plus, there's a whole bunch of people, and this actually I think is a really interesting tangential thing to all of this. It's a whole bunch of people who have never had to spend their days working from home who have now been told don't come to the office. A bunch of my mates working for big companies, many of whom you know, have literally got the email saying, look, just don't come into work anymore. Many of them have really only got it in the last couple of days, and it's like from Monday, don't come in. Now, a lot of people aren't used to working from home. And I know people like Scott Hanselman have been doing some really good tutorials about that because the guy literally lives out of his home office and he's got good advice. So go and like listen to people like that to work from home. But for things like training, that is really conducive to being able to sit in front of the computer. You're not having to sort of teleconference and find new ways of working with your colleagues. You're literally sitting there watching us. And again, we'll make sure that we have back channels to make sure that there's complete communication with us as well. So I'm literally getting a bit excited talking about it because I think this is just going to be a really, really great way of making the stuff that we do much more accessible to people. In fact, I saw a comment from someone who said, I think it was something along the lines of they were physically disabled and events like this would now actually give them access to things that they wouldn't have had before. These are unintended consequences of a positive nature. So I'm really trying hard to try and find all the good bits in this to make sure that we remain positive and we make these events super awesome. So I will be writing about this probably on Monday. I'll be putting in all the details of all the events. We'll have the cost information there. We'll have registration. I'd love to get a heap of people signed up to these events so that they can come along, do the Hack Yourself First stuff, get the full fat, for want of a better term, Scott Helm and Troy Hunt show, and get all the good stuff that you get if you came and saw us in person. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to have all of that next week. Wow, that's a quarter of an hour already. That did actually take a bit. Right, let me move on to other things. Now, the project formerly known as Project Svelbard. Oh. Last week, I devoted my weekly update to that, and the feedback has been absolutely amazing. So it has, without a lie, this has been 100% positive. And I just realized as soon as I said that, someone's going to pop up and go, oh, let's prove him wrong now. But no, look, it's really been really exceptionally good. There's obviously a lot of support for Have I Been Pwned remaining as an independent project, not being owned by another company, not being commercialized into something else. It is literally just me running it, deciding exactly how it grows, what data is loaded, what features are built, where the thing goes. And the outpouring of support has been really amazing. And it's I've just had so many emails since then, so many private messages, either via email or DM, from people saying, you know, look, this is a really great thing. We're really happy it's staying independent. We really appreciate what you're doing and the time and everything you commit to it. And it's it is. I'll never be able to share those messages, but it's just an amazing, humbling experience to get that. So thank you to everyone that has written. I have read every single one of them. I've replied to only a small number of them because there has been a lot of messages to deal with. But that's been lovely. So I of course, will be getting on with planning Have I Been Pwned? Ironically, I was planning on having a few months without doing conferences, and now I've just said I'm doing 3 workshops with conferences. So, you know, here we are. But this is kind of just rolling with it. So Project Svelbard, we can put that to bed. Have I Been Pwned is just going to march forward as it always has. And, of course, I've still got a whole bunch of new stuff that I now need to do with it in order to make it sustainable. So I will be announcing a bunch of things that are starting to get clearer and clearer in my head as I progress. Last week, because I just wanted to do Project Svelbard, I totally skipped over something that is actually very cool and very important. And this is about Pwned Passwords. Now, if you recall, Pwned Passwords is the service that has, how many passwords did I get up to? 500 million something? Let's just check the number count there. 555 million real world passwords from previous data breaches, which are now searchable either via an API or all downloadable, so that when people come on and or come along and they sign up to your website, you can decide to block passwords that are known to be bad, so passwords that are known to have occurred in a previous data breach. And of course, there's an API to do this, and it uses a mathematical model called K-anonymity. Without going into the great depth of it, because many of you have probably heard this before and it's easy to find online, the basic premise of K-anonymity is that you provide a very small amount of non-identifiable data to a service, in this case, Have I Been Pwned. Have I Been Pwned then comes back and says, here's a whole bunch of stuff that matches this search. You now find in there what your results are. So in the case of Have I Been Pwned, the way that would work is you take the password that you want to check, you hash it, SHA-1, you take the first 5 characters of that hash, you throw that to the API. So the only thing that I see if I was to be a malicious actor is I see the first 5 characters of a SHA-1 hash, and then I go, hey, here's every password. Let me rephrase that. Here is the suffix of every SHA-1 hash that begins with those 5 characters. So here's like the last 35 characters. And then for each one of them, here's how many times it's appeared in a data breach. And then the consumer goes, okay, cool. If I can join this up, I take my prefix, I take one of the suffixes, it matches. And then here is the prevalence count next to that, so I know how many times the password has appeared as well. Job done. Now, obviously, K-anonymity is designed for privacy. And the real goal of it is to have privacy from the operator of the service. So we want to make sure that, in this case, I cannot see the passwords that are being searched for. However, what about privacy from someone sitting on the wire observing the traffic? So someone between the service that I run on Have I Been Pwned and the client consuming the service. How do we get privacy from that actor? Well, the answer is TLS. So we use HTTPS. We encrypt all our things. And we get privacy and we get integrity and we get authenticity and all this sort of wonderful stuff. However, there's a but. And the but is, even though an actor sitting in the middle of that connection can't see the contents of the communication, they can see the size of the communication. And if an actor could sit there in the middle and they could start to profile requests and they could look at it and go, hey, this request results in a response that's 23.578 kilobytes. Which SHA-1 hash prefixes result in a response that is exactly that size? So they can profile that. And then they can go through and profile, in all, there's just over a million different possibilities because you've got 16 to the power of 5. Of course, 16 hexadecimal characters, 5 positions, just over a million. So they could go through, they could profile the encrypted, compressed size of every single one of those SHA-1 prefixes, and they could possibly determine which prefix had been searched for. Now, that would only give them what the prefix is. And of course, the whole idea of k-anonymity is that if someone knows the prefix, primarily me running the service, it's not enough to tell you what the actual password is. So in a way, it kind of doesn't matter, at least not compared to if it was to reveal the nature of the actual plain text password before it was hashed and then chopped off in the first 5 characters. But we also really, really want to be privacy-centric here. We want to make sure that we tighten this thing up as much as we possibly can. Now, there's an interesting little model here, and I'm just gonna make sure I get all of my details here right, because I want to make sure that everyone gets the right credit as well. We being Jannard and I, we had a bloke called Matt Weir. Now, Matt Weir apparently met Jannard at a conference somewhere. Might be meeting him virtually at a conference somewhere in the future. Anyway, Jannard and Matt had caught up at some time. Jannard is the guy who created the k-anonymity model for Pwned Password. He didn't create the mathematical model, don't lose your minds, but he's the one who said this is the right model to use for Pwned Passwords. So Jannard is a super smart bloke who's done a lot of work, particularly with Cloudflare workers, to make all this happen. He and Matt hooked up at a conference sometime, did the hallway track, I imagine, and Matt said, look, this is a bit of a risk. If you can observe the responses here and the sizes of them, even though they're encrypted, TLS connection, you could start to imply what the actual hash is. So the answer to this is the same answer as what we'd use to other cryptographic constructs where we wanted to try and obfuscate the actual size of the messages, which is to use padding. Now, the concept of padding is just to add more bytes so that it conceals the actual size of the underlying message. So this is what we've done with Pwned Passwords, and it is an opt-in where you can add a header, and we actually created a header called add-padding. And if you set that to true, then the Cloudflare worker will add a whole bunch of additional hash suffixes to the end of the response, prevalence count 0 for everyone, so that when you get that new decryptor, you can actually, and remember, decryption happens automatically because it's just a TLS connection. But you can see, oh, this has got 0 prevalence, so we know it's just a padding hash. But what it means is that anyone observing the traffic is going to see a response size which doesn't reveal the underlying hash prefix that we'll search for. This is also random. So the number of padded entries is random between a particular range. So if you request the same thing over and over and over and over again, you're going to get a different number of padded results, and you're going to see a different response size on the wire if you're an attacker. Now, in case you heard me say random, and you went, yes, but is it truly random or is it pseudo-random? They, being Cloudflare, are using their lava lamps in order to create the randomness. And if that sounds weird, go and read the blog post. Cloudflare lava lamps are a thing. They've actually got I think they still have a seismograph in the London office as well. Was it the London office or Singapore office? Anyway, they use like literally the movement of the Earth in order to generate randomness, which is used to then generate their prime numbers and things like this for their cryptographic primitives. Super, super cool stuff. I like the idea that if you're using Pwn passwords, you're using something which is partially driven off lava lamps. Don't know why I like it, just sounds cool. So, this is opt-in. This does increase your response size. It is still gzipped. If you can support Brotli, then it's going to be Brotlied. And in fact, interestingly, I don't know if I put it in here, if I discussed it somewhere else. But, here we go. Brotli, the Brotli responses were 29% smaller than the gzip responses. So we know that Brotli is a very efficient compression algorithm. Scott Helm has written about this before, and he found similar results depending on the content type. But anyway, so if you use Brotli and you use add padding in the header, then that compresses that response size right down. Anyway, I saw Stefan from Eve Online, and Eve Online is a massive user of Have I Been Pwned's Pwn passwords. He tweeted the other day and said that now that they've turned this on, they've seen absolutely no change in performance, which is great. I don't want to make it default simply because you're getting all of these padded entries with zero values. And I'm just a little bit worried that someone out there has done something screwy and made assumptions about the fact that there'll never be a zero value response and it might break some stuff. So this is opt-in. You have to be worried about someone being able to intercept traffic and imply these things. Now, then again, why do we have HTTPS? Because we're worried about people intercepting traffic as well as all the other good stuff it does. But then again, even if they did, and if they could imply the prefix, they don't know the suffix, so they don't know the actual password. And even if they did know the password, depending on the use case, so for example, EVE Online scenario, they don't know which person used that password. So this is a good thing, and I'm really pleased that Matt has come up with this, and I'm really pleased we've done it. In terms of real-world value that it actually adds, my hope is that it's actually really, really small. Only insofar as I think the practical mechanics of exploiting this would have been so obscure and bizarre anyway. But this is what we do. We work with edge cases and we try and close every single possible hole we can. So here we are. So that is Pwn passwords and padding. Now, that was that blog post. Something completely different, non-security related. Ubiquity. So I have written multiple blog posts about Ubiquity. This camera is literally being supported by Ubiquity because I've got boxes under here to get the camera up to the right height. And I've literally got a Unify AC SHD access point sitting right there supporting it. And it's still in the box. So Ubiquity make networking gear. Ubiquity is the world's largest manufacturer of access points. A fact I only recently learned, or at least only learned after I started buying their gear. I went and spent probably much more money than what I ever planned to, replacing very mainstream consumer grade access point gear in my house. I can't remember what it was. Was it Netgear? I had Billion before that. It was one of those things where if you go down to your local PC store, you'll see it in there and it's got fancy antennas and everything, and it just turns out to be absolute shit. I just had so many problems with it. So I went out and I spent a whole bunch of money buying Ubiquity gear, decking my house out. When I got it running, I was like, this is amazing. I love this stuff. I've got to write about this because I was just passionate about it. When I did that, a lot of people seemed to get very excited about it, which is good. And a lot of people bought Ubiquity stuff. And then the way this industry tends to work is, in this case, Ubiquity went, wow, this is really cool. Like, people are obviously paying attention to what Troy has written about this. Let's send Troy some more Ubiquity stuff. So they kept sending me gear. And every time they've sent me gear and I've installed it somewhere, I have always said they have sent me gear. But what I love about Ubiquity and what I love about the relationship with companies like Microsoft or Lenovo or Cloudflare or any other organization that gives me stuff, I found them and I spent money with them because I like what they do. Now, after that, if they go, we want to give you more of this thing so that you can use more of the thing that you already like, I'm down with that. And I have also written about how I choose what to endorse as well. And I'm really, really crystal clear on that. And in fact, I very, very regularly reject organizations that pop up and they're like, hey, we make such and such a thing and it's really awesome. We would like to give it to you for free and maybe you'll write about it. I said, no, no, that's not how it works. Not with me. Anywho, so I put a whole bunch of Ubiquiti stuff in this house. I have the luxury of it having already been wired for Ethernet when I moved in, which was fantastic because every single room I could start plugging in access points back to a patch board into switches, all part of the sort of ecosystem now where there's wired backhaul to access points all the way around the house. So that was really cool. I decked out my brother's house using in-wall units. So you can get these in-wall units, which basically look like a normal power plate on a wall, except that they're an access point. And they broadcast access points and they have Ethernet jacks in them as well. So I did his house there, put a really small full-width network cabinet in there as well, put a nice full-width switch and patchboard and all this sort of thing. So that was really cool. The Wi-Fi on my jet ski wasn't great. First world problems. More specifically, the Wi-Fi down the end of my jetty, because I live on the water here, wasn't great. So I used some of their mesh units and extended it down to there. And to be clear, like, this is mostly just me geeking out, going, hey, you know, it'd be cool. I'll put Wi-Fi on my jet ski because why not? So I did that. My parents' place, I put Amplify in there. So Amplify is the more consumer-centric model of the Unify range. That works fantastically for them because they've got like one unit that sits in the office where the internet comes into the house, and then they've got two satellite units that sit in different rooms that effectively work as amplifiers of that signal. My neighbor just over here, I set up as well. They had to go and buy their own, but then I set it up for them, which is great. It still seems to work because I can still see their SSIDs being broadcast. So I've had a lot of fun actually installing this for people. And recently, Ubiquiti sent me their Dream Machine. So their Dream Machine is a Ubiquiti Dream Machine. Unified Dream Machine, I think, is the correct word they use. What do they do? Because then they abbreviate it to UDM. So many acronyms. Unified Dream Machine, I was right. So the Unified Dream Machine, or the UDM, is effectively like an all-in-one unit. So one of the things that I really liked about Ubiquiti when I first installed it is rather than having like your typical, let's say you're going to get upset now, but like your typical Netgear consumer crapware, where everything just gets built into the one unit. And it's everything from the access point to the router to all the controller software. The whole box and dice actually sits there in this one thing. And it's like, here it is, cookie cutter, bah, you get it, that's it. And what I liked about Unify is it decomposes that. So I had a Cloud Key, which was the controller. I had a Unify security gateway, which did all the DHCP. I have the access points, I have switches, I have all of these things, and then I compose this network just the way I wanted it by picking the best bits of each sort of class of product. So the UDM actually sort of goes a little bit the other way and says, let's bundle all of this back in, which then starts to sound like the Amplify range, which is the consumer one I put in mum and dad's place, except that it still runs the Unify ecosystem. And the Unify ecosystem is the one that lets you start to plug in all of these different bits and pieces and have them all controlled from the one place and visibility all through the one control panel. And there is nothing cooler than getting to see a topological network graph of all of your access points and your switches and all of the clients which are then connected to it. And in fact, I only recently learned you can go through and choose an icon for each of the clients that accurately represents it. So my Samsung washing machine, whole other topic as to why I bothered to put that on the internet. The Samsung washing machine has a nice washing machine icon, and I look at the graph and I see this sitting there, and it's uplinked wirelessly to the media room access point, which then wires through to the switch in my garage, which then wires through to the unified security gateway and then out into the internet. So the whole sort of ecosystem kind of works together very nicely. So anyway, they sent me this Dream Machine and I was like, all right, well, what am I going to do with the thing? And then I remembered one of the other use cases, which I forgot to mention before, is I did a course for Ubiquiti, which is still available for free, where I went to one of my mates' restaurants. So there's a mate of mine called Raf, and Raf has a pizza restaurant just down the road here. And we wired his restaurant up with a whole bunch of Ubiquiti bits, and I used that as the course. So the course was like, here is how to actually do this. Now, Raf's Wi-Fi at home wasn't real good. So when I mean what, not real good, you'd go into his house, and you know, this is Australia. A lot of the houses are large. This is the Gold Coast in Australia. A lot of the houses are also on the water. We have more canals than Venice and Amsterdam combined. True story. So he's got a nice large place on the water, sprawls, two stories, and you'd walk in, and where the internet comes into his house is where his wireless router was, which is the way it is for most people. And he had one of these default Telstra units. So Telstra is our big telco down here. It'd sit in his office, but if he went upstairs and to the back of the house where his bedroom was, he would have a fraction of one bar and he might be able to get a megabit per second. So it was just terrible Wi-Fi there. And I know it sounds really trivial, but I was going to say it wasn't a very pretty unit either. So the Telstra modem that they send, it's the all-in-one. It's modem, it's router, it's access points, the whole thing. Not a pretty unit, but, you know, whatever. It's networking gear. Now, the Dream Machine, however, is a very pretty unit. It's something that you'd be happy to have sitting on your desk. So anyway, we got this unit, and I went around to his place the other day, and I took this unit, but I was conscious that just this unit itself wasn't going to do it. And in fact, I had a couple of comments after I wrote this blog post where I had some really obnoxious comments, actually. Someone was like, I mean, I've just written thousands of words about how to configure a piece of networking equipment to try and make your lives better. And he was very upset that Raf's house was big and that he had a swimming pool. And it was just something along the lines of, this is so obnoxious, you're just showing off your friend's house. And I was like, are you interested in the Wi-Fi or not? Okay, ban, delete, comment, gone. It was really obnoxious. So moving on, that wasn't going to cover the whole space. And the existing unit that was there, the Telstra unit, would barely work in his bedroom. And once we set the UDM up in the same location as the Telstra unit, same story, it would barely work in the bedroom. So the other thing that I took with me is a new unit from Ubiquiti, and it's called a Flex HD. And I'm just scrolling down to where it is on my blog post here. But the Flex HD is cool because it's literally like one of those skinny Coke cans. So imagine this now empty beer can, and it's a little bit thinner than the beer can and a little bit higher than the beer can. And it's all white, and it's got a little blue ring across the top as a light, just to show when it's booting, etc. You can turn that off as well. We did turn it off because we wanted it to be as discreet as possible. And what you can do is, because this is part of the Unify suite of products, is you can wirelessly uplink that to the UDM. So after we got the UDM set up and we went through the whole process, I literally just plugged the Flex HD into the wall at the other end of the house, but on the same floor under the bedroom, plugged it in. It then appeared in the Unify control panel, and I went adopt, and it went, yeah, sure, we'll adopt it. Took it on board, and that was it. Like, the network was extended. So when we then went upstairs into his bedroom, we had all the bars on the phone, and we had absolute maximum throughput on his internet connection, which was super, super cool because that bit was very, very simple. Fun fact also, when I was setting it up, whenever I set up someone's network, it's always like, okay, what do you want to call your SSID? Because this is literally going to be broadcast and people are going to come around, they're going to see it. I was like, you got a dog, haven't you? Dog's called Elfie. Let's call it ElfieNet. But just for kicks, because I've never done this before, I want to put a dog emoji after ElfieNet. And I've seen other people do emojis in SSIDs, and some of them are super, super cool. Some of them we can't really talk about on a podcast like this. But ElfieNet space dog emoji, sweet, let's see what happens. And it actually worked in most places. And when I say worked, it actually worked everywhere in terms of connecting to the network. But I'm looking at the image here of his rather old, I would assume, brother printer. And ElfieNet appears, and then there's a space, and there's a whole bunch of really messed up encoding. And on his Samsung TV, the emoji just didn't show. On the Apple TV, emoji showed up fine, but that's, I guess, the kind of experience you expect from Apple. So that was it. It was actually a really, really neat setup. And it's cool now to sort of see like little ElfieNets popping up in the dog there, and everyone's sort of connecting to the dog, and they think it's very fun. And we used a password, which I'm not going to tell you, but a password, which was a little bit fun as well. So when the kids connect their devices and everything, it's cool. So that's just a really, really nice outcome. That UDM is super, super cool. As a turnkey solution, I would still get my parents' Amplify. I think if you're not going to be a power user, and by power user I mean things like, you know, what if you want to have VLANs? I like having a VLAN that I can put my IoT stuff on. Now, I don't think Raf knows what a VLAN is, so he makes a great pizza, but he's not a networking guy. So I don't think he'd be too worried about that. This was probably overkill for him, but I had the gear, and I'm happy to set it up and be the person who then looks after that. So I'd probably still go down the amplifier range for people that don't need access to things like VLAN and that really extensive configurability and extensibility that you get from the Unify range, but this was super cool for that. I do have in my cupboard up there amongst a lot of boxes of Unify stuff, I've got a UDM Pro, which is a rack-mounted Dream Machine. And alongside that, I've got some other gear as well, such as some very, very nice switches. And I do intend to take my home network and actually build out a whole rack-mounted job. The problem I have with that is that where everything is patched down in the garage is just a terrible position to put a rack. And I literally need to get every single cable that's patched through to one point on the wall moved several meters over to another spot. And it turns out that's really expensive to do. So I've just got to have a little bit of a think about how I do that. But I will hopefully do a follow-up, which is not only using a UDM Pro, but how to actually migrate your Unify network from an existing cloud key and USG and control and everything over to the new one. But that gear looks like it's going to be super, super sweet. So I'm looking forward to doing that bit to get my geek on a little bit more. All right, so that was a relatively long one in the scheme of things, but I really, really wanted to spend some time talking about particularly those upcoming workshops, which are going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm going to start preparing information on that literally over the weekend and publishing all of that stuff on Monday. You'll be able to buy tickets hopefully from Monday if you want to come along to any of those three events that are coming up. And depending on how these go, I think we'll do more of them in the future. And again, look, I am excited about the opportunity that something which is otherwise very disruptive on all of our lives presents us. And my gut feel is that I think that not only will these events be great, but I think they'll actually set a new tone for how we do things once everyone starts to go back to their normal everyday lives as well. So last thing this week is my sponsor. Sponsor is 1Password. 1Password needs no introduction. It is still the same product that I've been using for the last 9 years. It's same one, but just much better than what it was 9 years ago, but it's still 1Password all the way. And it's still I think it's the one piece of software that I use every single day, other than like iOS, you know, and obviously the essentials, Twitter and that kind of stuff. But it is the one thing that is an absolute pivotal part of my life and has so many of my secrets in there, not just my passwords, but my credit cards and my secure notes and all that sort of stuff. So this audience probably doesn't need a lot of introduction to that, but if you're not on 1Password already, and also now that you're in an organization and you're probably having to work from home, if you don't have your team on 1Password so that you're able to securely share things between you, even when you're at home working in your underwear, this is a really good way of doing that as well. So I'd really, really like the idea of seeing password managers get more into the enterprise as well. So that's it for this week. Next week, when I come to you, I'll be able to talk a lot more about those events. We'll hopefully have a bunch of registrations. We'll have sign-up pages and things already. I don't know what else is going to happen between now and then. I'm not going to run out of beer. I know that much. It is a bit of a crazy time, but I hopefully will be able to use some of this, like I said earlier on, to just to try and do some of the things that to me are normal and give me a lot of pleasure, which is writing blog posts and creating content. So I'll see you next week. We'll talk more about that.